Now, Chapter 15, Krishna Erects the Dwarka Fort. After Kamsa's death, his two wives became widows. According to Vedic civilization, a woman is never independent. She has three stages of life. In childhood, a woman should live under the protection of her father. A youthful woman should live under the protection of her young husband. And in the event of the death of her husband, she should live under the protection of her grown-up children. Or if she has no grown-up children, she must go back to her father and live as a widow under his protection. It appears that Kamsa had no grown-up sons. After becoming widows, his wives returned to the shelter of their father. Kamsa had two queens, Hasti and Prapti, and both happened to be the daughters of King Jarasandha, the lord of the Bihar province, known in those days as Magadharaj. After reaching home, both queens explained their awkward position following Kamsa's death. The king of Magadha, Jarasandha, was mortified on hearing of the pitiable condition of his two daughters. When informed of the death of Kamsa, Jarasandha decided on the spot that he would rid the world of all the members of the Yadu dynasty. He decided that since Krishna had killed Kamsa, the whole dynasty of the Yadus should be killed. He began to make extensive arrangements to attack the kingdom of Mathura with his innumerable military phalanxes consisting of many thousands of chariots, horses, elephants, and infantry soldiers. Jarasandha prepared 13 such military phalanxes to retaliate the death of Kamsa. Taking with him all his military strength, he attacked the capital of the Yadu kings, Mathura, surrounding it from all directions. Sri Krishna, who appeared like an ordinary human being, saw the immense strength of Jarasandha, which appeared like an ocean about to cover a beach at any moment. He also perceived that the inhabitants of Mathura were overwhelmed with fear. He began to think within himself about the situation of his mission as an incarnation and how to tackle the present situation before him. His mission was to diminish the overburdened population of the whole world. Therefore, he took the opportunity to face so many men, chariots, elephants, and horses. The military strength of Jarasandha had appeared before him, and he decided to kill the entire force of Jarasandha so that he would again go back and reorganize his military strength. While Lord Krishna was thinking in that way, two beautiful chariots, fully equipped with drivers, weapons, flags, and other paraphernalia, arrived for him from outer space. Krishna saw the two chariots present before him and immediately addressed his elder brother Balaram, who is also known as Sankarshan. My dear elder brother, best among the Aryans, you are the Lord of the universe, and specifically, you are the protector of the Yadu dynasty. The members of the Yadu dynasty sense great danger before the soldiers of Jarasandha, and they are very much aggrieved. Just to give them protection, your chariot is also here, filled with military weapons. I request you to sit on your chariot and kill all these soldiers, the entire military strength of the enemy. Both of us have descended on this earth just to annihilate such unnecessary bellicose forces, and give protection to the pious devotees. So we have the opportunity to fulfill our mission. Please, let us execute it. Thus Krishna and Balaram, the descendants of Dasharatha, decided to annihilate the 13 military companies of Jarasandha. Krishna went upon the chariot on which Daruk was the driver, and with a small army, to the blowing of conch shells, he came out of the city of Mathura. Curiously enough, although the other party was equipped with greater military strength, just after they heard the vibration of Krishna's conch shell, their hearts were shaken. When Jarasandha saw both Balaram and Krishna, he was a little bit compassionate because both Krishna and Balaram happened to be related to him as grandsons. He specifically addressed Krishna as Purushottam, meaning the lowest among men. Actually, Krishna is known in all Vedic literatures as Purushottam, the highest among men. Jarasandha had no intention of addressing Krishna as Purushottam, but great scholars have determined the true meaning of the word Purushottam to be one who makes all other personalities go downward. Actually, no one can be equal to or greater than the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Jarasandha said, "It will be a great dishonor for me to fight with boys like Krishna and Balaram." Because Krishna had killed Kamsa, Jarasandha specifically addressed him as the killer of his own relatives. Kamsa had killed many of his own nephews, yet Jarasandha did not take notice of it. But because Krishna had killed his maternal uncle Kamsa, Jarasandha tried to criticize him. That is the way of demoniac dealings. Demons do not try to find their own faults, but try to find the faults of their friends. Jarasandha also criticized Krishna for not being even a Kshatriya. Because he was raised by Maharaj Nanda, Krishna was not a Kshatriya, but a Vaishya. Vaishyas are generally called Guptas, and the word Gupta can also be used to mean hidden. So Krishna was both hidden and raised by Nanda Maharaj. Jarasandha accused Krishna of three faults: that he killed his own maternal uncle, that he was hidden in his childhood, and that he was not even a Kshatriya. And therefore, Jarasandha felt ashamed to fight with him. Next, he turned toward Balaram and addressed him. "You, Balaram, if you like, you can fight along with him, and if you have patience, then you can wait to be killed by my arrows. Thus you can be promoted to heaven." It is stated in the Bhagavad Gita that a Kshatriya can benefit in two ways while fighting. If a Kshatriya gains victory in the fight, he enjoys the results of victory. But even if killed, he is promoted to the heavenly kingdom. After hearing Jarasandha speak in that way, Krishna answered, "My dear King Jarasandha, heroes do not talk much. Rather, they show their prowess. Because you are talking a great deal, it appears that you are assured of your death in this battle. We do not care to hear you any longer, for it is useless to hear the words of a person who is going to die or one who is very distressed." To fight with Krishna, Jarasandha surrounded him from all sides with great military strength. As the sun appears covered by cloudy air and dust, Krishna, the Supreme Sun, was covered by the military strength of Jarasandha. Krishna's and Balaram's chariots were marked with pictures of Garuda and palm trees. The women of Mathura all stood on the tops of the houses, palaces, and gates to see the wonderful fight. But when Krishna's chariot was surrounded by Jarasandha's military force and was no longer visible to them, they were so frightened that some of them fainted. Krishna saw himself overwhelmed by the military strength of Jarasandha. His small army of soldiers was being harassed, so he immediately took up his bow named Shanga. He took his arrows from their quiver, and one after another, he set them on the bowstring and shot them toward the enemy. They were so accurate that the elephants, horses, and infantry soldiers of Jarasandha were quickly killed. The incessant arrows thrown by Krishna appeared like a whirlwind of blazing fire, killing all of the military strength of Jarasandha. As Krishna released his arrows, all the elephants gradually began to fall, their heads severed by the arrows. Similarly, all the horses fell, their legs severed, and the chariots fell also, along with their flags and the fighters and drivers on the chariots. Almost all the infantry soldiers fell on the field of battle, their heads, hands, and legs cut off. In this way, many thousands of elephants and horses were killed, and their blood flowed just like the waves of a river. In that river, the severed arms of men appeared like snakes, and their heads like tortoises. The dead bodies of the elephants appeared like small islands, and the dead horses appeared like sharks. By the arrangement of the supreme will, there was a great river of blood filled with paraphernalia. The hands and legs of the infantry soldiers floated just like different kinds of fish. The hair of the soldiers floated like seaweed and moss, and the floating bows of the soldiers resembled waves of the river. And all the jewelry from the bodies of the soldiers and commanders seemed like many pebbles flowing down the river of blood. Lord Balaram, who is also known as Sankarshan, began to fight with his club in such a heroic way that the river of blood created by Krishna overflooded. Cowards became very much afraid upon seeing the ghastly and horrible scene, and heroes began to talk delightedly among themselves about the heroism of the two brothers. Although Jarasandha was equipped with a vast ocean of military strength, the fighting of Lord Krishna and Balaram converted the whole situation into a ghastly scene far beyond ordinary fighting. Persons of ordinary merit cannot estimate how it could be possible, but when such activities are accepted as pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, under whose will everything is possible, then this can be understood. The Supreme Personality of Godhead creates, maintains, and dissolves the cosmic manifestation merely by His will. For Him to create such a vast scene of devastation while fighting with an enemy is not so wonderful. And yet, because Krishna and Balaram were fighting with Jarasandha just like ordinary human beings, the affair appeared wonderful. When all the soldiers of Jarasandha were killed, and he was the only one left alive, certainly he was very depressed. Sri Balaram immediately arrested him, just as, with great strength, one lion captures another. But while Lord Balaram was binding Jarasandha with the rope of Varun, and ordinary ropes also, Lord Krishna, with a greater plan in mind for the future, asked Lord Balaram not to arrest him. Krishna then released Jarasandha. As a great fighting hero, Jarasandha was ashamed, and he decided that he would no longer live as a king, but he would resign from his position in the royal order and go to the forest to practice meditation under severe austerities and penances. As he was returning home with other royal friends, however, they advised him not to retire, but to regain strength to fight again with Krishna in the near future. The princely friends of Jarasandha instructed him that ordinarily it would not have been possible for him to be defeated by the strength of the Yadu kings. The defeat he had experienced was simply due to his ill luck. The princely order encouraged King Jarasandha. His fighting, they said, was certainly heroic. Therefore, he should not take his defeat very seriously, since it was due only to his past mistakes. After all, there was no fault in his fighting. In this way, Jarasandha, the king of Magadha province, having lost all his strength, and having been insulted by his arrest and subsequent release, could do nothing but return to his kingdom. Thus Lord Krishna conquered the soldiers of Jarasandha. Although Krishna's army was tiny in comparison to Jarasandha's, not a pinch of his strength was lost, whereas all of Jarasandha's men were killed. The denizens of heaven were very pleased, and they offered their respects by chanting in glorification of the Lord and showering him with flowers, accepting the victory with great appreciation. Jarasandha returned to his kingdom, and Mathura city was saved from the danger of imminent attack. The citizens of Mathura organized the combined services of professional singers like Sutas and Magadhas and poets who could compose nice songs, and they began to chant the victory glorification of Lord Krishna. When Lord Krishna entered the city after the victory, many bugles, conches, and kettle drums sounded, and the vibrations of various musical instruments like bairi, turiya, veena, flute, and mridanga all joined together to make a beautiful reception. While Krishna was entering, the whole city was cleansed. All the different streets and roads were sprinkled with water, and the inhabitants, being joyous, decorated their respective houses, roads, and shops with flags and festoons. The Brahmins chanted Vedic mantras at numerous places. The people constructed road crossings, entrances, lanes, and streets. When Lord Krishna was entering the nicely decorated city of Mathura in a festive attitude, the ladies and girls of Mathura prepared different kinds of flower garlands to make the ceremony more auspicious. In accordance with the Vedic custom, they took yogurt mixed with fresh green grass and began to strew it here and there to make the victory jubilation even more auspicious. As Krishna passed through the streets, all the ladies and women regarded him with eyes bright with great affection. Krishna and Balaram carried various kinds of ornaments, jewels, and other booty carefully collected from the battlefield and presented it to King Ugrasena. Krishna thus offered his respect to his grandfather because Ugrasena was at that time the crowned king of the Yadu dynasty. Jarasandha, the king of Magadha, besieged the city of Mathura not only once, but 17 times in the same way, equipped with the same number of military phalanxes. Each and every time he was defeated, and all his soldiers were killed by Krishna, and each time he had to return disappointed. Each time the princely order of the Yadu dynasty arrested Jarasandha in the same way, and again released him in an insulting manner. And each time Jarasandha shamelessly returned home. While Jarasandha was attempting his 18th attack, a Yavan king somewhere to the south of Mathura became attracted by the opulence of the Yadu dynasty and also attacked the city. It is said that the king of the Yavanas, known as Kaliyavan, was induced to attack by Narad. This story is narrated in the Vishnu Purana. Once Gargamuni, the priest of the Yadu dynasty, was taunted by his brother-in-law. When the kings of the Yadu dynasty heard the taunt, they laughed at him, and Gargamuni became angry at the Yadu kings. He decided that he would produce someone who would be very fearful to the Yadu dynasty. So he pleased Lord Shiva and received from him the benediction of a son. He begot this son, Kaliyavan, in the wife of a Yavan king. This Kaliyavan inquired from Narad, "Who are the most powerful kings in the world?" Narad informed him that the Yadus were the most powerful. Thus informed, Kaliyavan attacked the city of Mathura at the same time that Jarasandha tried to attack it for the 18th time. Kaliyavan was very anxious to declare war on a king of the world who would be a suitable combatant for him, but he had not found any. However, being informed about Mathura by Narad, he thought it wise to attack this city with 30 million Yavan soldiers. When Mathura was thus besieged, Lord Sri Krishna began to consider, in consultation with Baladev, how much the Yadu dynasty was in distress, being threatened by the attacks of two formidable enemies, Jarasandha and Kaliyavan. Time was growing short. Kaliyavan was already besieging Mathura from all sides, and it was expected that the day after next, Jarasandha would also come, equipped with the same number of divisions of soldiers as in his previous 17 attempts. Krishna was certain that Jarasandha would take advantage of the opportunity to capture Mathura when it was also being besieged by Kaliyavan. He therefore thought it wise to take precautionary measures for defending two strategic points of Mathura. If both Krishna and Balaram were engaged in fighting with Kaliyavan at one place, Jarasandha might come at another to attack the whole Yadu family and take his revenge. Jarasandha was very powerful, and having been defeated 17 times, he might vengefully kill the members of the Yadu family or arrest them and take them to his kingdom. Krishna therefore decided to construct a formidable fort where no two-legged animal, either man or demon, could enter. He decided to keep his relatives there so that he would then be free to fight the enemy. It appears that formerly Dvarka was also part of the kingdom of Mathura, because in the Srimad Bhagavatam it is stated that Krishna constructed a fort in the midst of the sea. Remnants of the fort Krishna constructed still exist on the Bay of Dvarka. Krishna first of all constructed a very strong wall covering 96 square miles, and the wall itself was within the sea. It was certainly wonderful and was planned and constructed by Vishvakarma. No ordinary architect could construct such a fort within the sea, but an architect like Vishvakarma, who is considered to be the engineer among the demigods, can execute such wonderful craftsmanship anywhere in the universe.
if huge planets can float in weightlessness in outer space by the arrangement of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, surely the architectural construction of a fort covering 96 square miles within the sea was not very wonderful. It is stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam that this new, well-constructed city developed within the sea had regular planned roads, streets, and lanes. There were also well-planned paths, and there were gardens filled with plants known as kalpavrikshas, or desire trees. These desire trees are not like ordinary trees of the material world. The desire trees are found in the spiritual world. By Krishna's supreme will, everything is possible. So such desire trees were planted in Dvarka, the city constructed by Krishna. The city was also filled with many palaces and gopuras, or big gates. These gopuras are still found in some of the larger temples. They are very high and constructed with fine artistic skill. Such palaces and gates held golden water pots, kalasha. These water pots on the gates or in the palaces are considered auspicious signs. Almost all the palaces were skyscrapers. In each and every house, big pots of gold and silver and grains were stocked in underground rooms. And there were many golden water pots within the rooms. The bedrooms were all bedecked with jewels, and the floors were mosaic pavements of Maracatta jewels. The Vishnu deity, worshipped by the descendants of Yadu, was installed in each house in the city. The residential quarters were so arranged that the different castes, Brahmins, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and Shudras, had their respective quarters. It appears from this that the caste system existed even at that time. In the center of the city was a residence made specifically for King Ugrasen. This was the most dazzling of all the houses. When the demigods saw that Krishna was constructing a particular city of his own choice, they sent the celebrated Parijak flower of the heavenly planet to be planted in the new city, and they also sent a parliamentary house, Sudama. The specific quality of this assembly house was that anyone participating in a meeting within it would overcome the influence of invalidity due to old age. The demigod Varun also presented a horse, which was all white, except for black ears, and which could run at the speed of the mind. Kuvera, the treasurer of the demigods, presented the art of attaining the 8 perfectional stages of material opulence. In this way, all the demigods began to present their respective gifts according to their different capacities. There are 33 million demigods, each entrusted with a particular department of universal management. All the demigods took the opportunity of the Supreme Personality of Godhead's constructing a city of his own choice to present their respective gifts, making the city of Mathura unique within the universe. This proves that there are undoubtedly innumerable demigods, but none of them is independent of Krishna. As stated in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishna is the supreme master, and all others are servants. So all the servants took the opportunity to render service to Krishna when he was personally present within this universe. This example should be followed by all, especially those who are Krishna conscious, for they should serve Krishna by their respective abilities. When the new city was fully constructed according to plan, Krishna transferred all the inhabitants of Mathura and installed Sri Balaram as the city father. After this, he consulted with Balaram, and being garlanded with lotus flowers, he came out of the city to meet Kalyavan, who had already seized Mathura without taking up any weapons. When Krishna came out of the city, Kalyavan, who had never seen Krishna before, saw him to be extraordinarily beautiful, dressed in yellow garments. Passing through his assembly of soldiers, Krishna appeared like the moon in the sky, passing through the assembled clouds. Kalyavan was fortunate enough to see the lines of Sri Vatsa, a particular impression on the chest of Sri Krishna, and the Kastuba jewel he was wearing. Kalyavan saw him, however, in his Vishnu form, with a well-built body, four hands, and eyes like the petals of a newly blooming lotus. Krishna appeared blissful, with a handsome forehead and beautiful face, with smiling eyes, restless eyebrows, and moving earrings. Before seeing Krishna, Kalyavan had heard about him from Narad. And now the descriptions of Narad were confirmed. Kalyavan noticed Krishna's specific marks and the jewels on his chest, his beautiful garland of lotus flowers, his lotus-like eyes, and similar beautiful bodily features. He concluded that this beautiful personality must be Vasudev, for every description he had previously heard from Narad was substantiated by the presence of Krishna. Kalyavan was astonished to see Krishna passing through his army without any weapon in his hands and without any chariot. He was simply walking on foot. Kalyavan had come to fight with Krishna, and yet he had sufficient principles not to take up any kind of weapon. He decided to fight with him hand to hand. Thus he prepared to capture Krishna and fight. Krishna, however, went ahead without looking at Kalyavan. Kalyavan began to follow him with a desire to capture him. But in spite of all his swift running, he could not capture Krishna. Krishna cannot be captured even by the mental speed attained by great yogis. He can be captured only by devotional service. And Kalyavan was not practiced in devotional service. He wanted to capture Krishna, and since he could not do so, he followed him from behind. Kalyavan began running very fast, thinking, "Now I am nearer. I will capture him." But he could not. Krishna led him far away and entered the cave of a hill. Kalyavan thought that Krishna was trying to avoid fighting him and was therefore taking shelter of the cave. He rebuked him with the following words, "O Krishna, I heard that you are a great hero, born in the dynasty of Yadu, but I see that you are running away from fighting like a coward. It is not worthy of your good name and family tradition." Kalyavan was following, running very fast, but still he could not catch Krishna because he was not freed from all contaminations of sinful life. According to Vedic culture, anyone who does not follow the regulative principles observed by the higher castes, like the Brahmins, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and even the laborer class, is called a Malecha or Yavan. The Vedic social situation is so planned that persons accepted as Shudras can gradually be elevated to the position of Brahmins by the cultural advancement known as Samskara, or the purificational process. The version of the Vedic scriptures is that no one becomes a Brahmin or a Malecha simply by birth. By birth, everyone is accepted as Shudra. One has to elevate himself by the purificational process to the stage of Brahminical life. If he doesn't, if he degrades himself further, He is then called a Malecha or Yavin. Kaliyavan belonged to the class of Malechas and Yavanas. Contaminated by sinful activities, he could not approach Krishna. The principles from which higher class men are restricted, namely illicit sexual indulgence, meat eating, gambling, and intoxication, are an integral part of the lives of the Malechas and Yavanas. Being bound by such sinful activities, one cannot make any advancement in God realization. The Bhagavad Gita confirms that only one completely freed from all sinful reactions can engage in devotional service or Krishna consciousness. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purport of the second volume, 15th chapter of Krishna, Krishna Erects the Dvarka.